This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Is the world more peaceful since the revolution? It is a shame that your people suffered. But bounty hunting is a complicated profession. They said you were coming. They said you were the best in the parsec. Would you agree?
I'm Nicole Byer.
And I'm Lauren Lapkus.
And we are consuming a new piece of Star Wars media every week and breaking it down.
We've basically seen everything there is to. I mean, we have seen a lot of stuff at this point, and we've passed many tests. We have aced many quizzes. I'm truly like, we're experts, but whatever.
Yeah, we're trying to get in that new Star Wars movie directed by a man whose name I don't dare say out loud because I don't know how to pronounce it.
Taika Waititi.
Is that how you say it?
Okay. I got a nod over here. Okay, I'm going to ride with that. Yeah, we want to be in the movie, sir. So please let us in the movie, please.
Yeah, please.
okay, so it's Baby Yoda time, which I couldn't be happier about it, honestly. I've been waiting for this day for a long time. On today's episode, we're diving into Star Wars' first live-action series, The Mandalorian. And we watched the first three episodes of season one, and we're going to talk about that today. So if you're still new to the series, there may be some spoilers leading up to that point, but, you know.
Not our fault.
I don't know what to tell you.
If you like Star Wars, you should have been watched it.
I mean, we've been spoiling stuff for the last however many episodes, so we spoil everything. But watch the first three. I'm excited about our guests today. One is a writer and comedian who starred on Amazon's The Tick series, and the other is a film critic and writer for The Atlantic. And together they co-host the very funny Blank Check podcast, where they review directors' complete filmographies episode to episode. Welcome to the show, Griffin Newman and David Sims.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here.
As you said, it's Baby Yoda time, and your producer Mars kindly sent us a couple options of like things you were going to be covering and let us choose. And I think David and I both agreed the thing we would most like to be witness to. is the two of you meeting Baby Yoda for the first time.
Right, your initial thoughts. Baby Yoda wave. Oh
my God. Felt like the most exciting, because I feel like the journey of this podcast has sort of unknowingly been the two of you getting to the point where you get to meet Baby Yoda.
Yeah, because Baby Yoda's so cute.
My jaw was on the floor when Baby Yoda appeared.
I screamed.
It feels like, judging by everything, listening to your episodes, everything you've liked in Star Wars and everything you've disliked in Star
right,
Wars.
Baby Yoda is right there at the farthest end of the like skeptic.
It's uh-huh. almost like the focus group result retroactively. Of everything you want.
Did you know? Like, how much did you know you were in for with Baby Yoda? I assume you knew Baby Yoda existed.
Yeah. I knew Baby Yoda existed. I thought mm-hmm. Baby Yoda made appearances. I didn't know Baby Yoda was number two on the call sheet.
Same.
He's the thing.
Same.
Didn't yeah. know it.
I didn't know. And also, mm-hmm. like, I feel like we've seen, it's the same as, like, our experience with all of Star Wars, I think, where, like, we saw memes. We knew, like, general mm-hmm. culture points about them or whatever, like, references. And Baby Yoda was the only thing that made it through from The Mandalorian to us, I think, and in our yes. in our bubble. And I've been excited about it. I've like wanted merch. We bought some shirts on Instagram that have Baby Yoda in the pocket. And the quality
when, like,
is
he's
questionable.
Poking out of the pocket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of, I like that.
Yeah,
that's cute.
It's cute.
I like a meta shirt like that that incorporates
his
the pocket.
Portability. his portability is very crucial
it's
to his cuteness.
Key feature.
Nicole, we haven't talked about these shirts because they are from an Instagram ad, and the pocket
they
is
are.
Drawn on.
The pocket is drawn on. There are no natural fibers in this shirt. It is all.
If you walk near a stove, you will blow up.
You're just going to go up in flames. Yeah.
I need to walk back my previous statement. I hate this. There's nothing I dislike more than a liar's pocket.
Yep.
It's a liar. I googled like Baby Yoda pocket shirt just to try and find it. There are 1 million versions of this. It is crazy yes. how yes. many kinds there are.
This company was called like Shirts for Her or something oh. real
and it took like
stupid.
It took a really long time to arrive
yes so
and
long.
When it arrived I was like, what is this? And then it was like the shirt and I was like questionable.
And you know when you like order some weird merch and then it arrives and it like smells like vinegar, you're like, wait, what is yep. where did this
oh
come
my god
from?
My best one was I ordered an Instagram I was fooled by an Instagram ad over Christmas for this giant seal pillow that was like huggable squishy big thing, and it arrived in the mail and was 13 centimeters thick.
Oh boy.
It was
oh
the boy. Smallest thing I've ever seen in my life. I was like so pissed. And it was a carnival toy. It was not at all what was advertised to me. And I paid $26.
It was like
for
a claw
it.
Machine.
Yeah.
That's
toy.
So yeah. funny. Yeah. That's like the toilet paper scams going on now on Amazon.
What is happening?
People are paying $90 and it takes 2 months for miniature toilet paper to arrive. It gets to you and it's so tiny.
Wait,
a
yeah.
friend
what?
Of ours, I'll tell you who later, but she ordered it and then she took a picture next to real toilet paper for scale. It's very funny.
That's so
there are a
dumb.
Lot of people who get tricked with that too, with like buying furniture. They're like, I can't believe this chaise lounge only costs $15.
Oh my God, I know. You gotta think.
And it's like for Polly Pocket.
There are two tricks like that. There's that one, which is you're actually buying the dollhouse version of what you think mm-hmm. you're getting. Mm-hmm. And the second one, which I like even more, is you're buying a mouse pad with the image of the product printed
this
on it.
This is like, I think Emily Heller
Emily
had
Emily Heller.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. She
got a welcome
yes.
mat that was just foam with yes. a picture of a mat on it.
It was like a yes. picture of grass or whatever. Like it was yes. like, it looked so like good. It would be like you could rub your feet on it. And it was just a drawing. I just
it
think
made
that
me
is
laugh
psychotic.
So
can I say, it's weird because like the timing is weird. It's not a Christmas season. We're in May. But I feel like there's like a Tickle Me Elmo.
I truly didn't know what you were talking. I was like, we are? I had no idea what month it was.
Right now it is currently May.
Wow, okay.
I did look out the window and I was like, I don't think it's Christmas.
But maybe it is. Who knows? He's probably right.
It took so long for official Baby Yoda merchandise to hit
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
they were trying to keep it under wraps and make sure that like it didn't leak before the show premiered.
Oh.
So it's taken however many months. And I, for the last like 3 weeks, trying to find things to occupy my brain, have had like 4 different apps where I have Baby Yoda saved for later with notifications for when it goes back in stock.
I do want
to get
something.
A Baby Yoda doll. I'm getting one this week. I think it's finally supposed to come this week.
I think I want a Baby Yoda doll. And Mars, our producer, sent us on Twitter, women, there's like a mom Facebook group where they dress Baby Yoda up as children.
This is our Hoth Goss segment.
And, is it?
And it is amazing. Yes, these people will take Baby Yoda dolls and put them into like real baby clothes and prop them up like they're babies. It's truly scary. And I recently came across a whole YouTube world where women have these really lifelike baby dolls. And they will treat them like real babies and change their diaper on camera. And they'll walk you through their whole day with the baby. And it makes me sick. I think it's honestly really scary. And have you seen Servant on Apple TV?
No. What is Servant?
Yes. The M. Night Shyamalan show.
It's really creepy. And part of the thing is, I mean, whatever, spoiler, skip if you don't care or if you care, whatever. But there's a woman who has lost a child and she is given a real-ish baby doll. And she takes care of it as if it's her own baby, as if it never...
No, mm-hmm. We can't do this to people.
It's not good. So when I see these Baby Yoda dolls, I feel this way because I'm sure they feel really like weighted and good, but there's something so unsettling about putting a headband on it.
Sure. There's also something because he is
there's
not...
There's some step being taken there.
Something doesn't feel good to me.
Because he is not human, right, Baby Yoda?
Mm-hmm.
And because Baby Yoda is a puppet, like is done practically on the show.
Really?
Oh, it is?
Yes,
oh
yeah. All, that's
really
natural.
Fucking cool.
Even better.
I didn't realize.
Yeah.
When he moves a ton, like anytime there's a really complicated movement, it's CGI.
Mm-hmm.
But they try to make the CGI look as much like the puppet as possible. And it's like 95% puppet.
That's really good.
I love that.
And it's two people, right? One is like the ears and the, you know, and then one is the like the eyes and the facial expressions.
Oh yeah. My God. Wait. Okay. Wait. I want to get into all of this. I want to back up a little bit because I want to talk about your podcast. I didn't realize this, that Blank Check started as an in-depth discussion of the Star Wars prequels.
So yes.
Tell us about how that started and what that experience was like for you.
David Sion.
Griffin, do you want to take this?
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
We became friends through going to a movie trivia night together.
Yeah.
When we were both in sort of dark periods of our lives and needed something to consume our time and energy.
Brag.
So David was post-breakup. I was post-getting fired from a TV show. And we were just like, let's put everything into this trivia night. And did it for like over a year and then felt like we need to step away from this. And so we are looking for something to become our new, like, weekly friend activity. And going back and forth, we were, like, brainstorming and had this idea of what if we do a podcast where we pretend that The Phantom Menace is the only Star Wars movie that exists? Because George Lucas is always so adamant, like, you should watch this one first. This is the order it intended.
Right, it's the beginning anyway.
George Lucas says that you should start at the beginning?
Yeah, he's like, I made them out of order, but like, this is really the best way to see the story is to see it this way.
You're the first person to tell us that. That is interesting.
You really are.
Yeah.
Because it would have been so helpful maybe if we did it that way.
Well, no, this was.
I don't think so.
That was the thing.
I think it'd be way worse.
Like, for us, it was partly a bit, but we were also like, it's an interesting thought experiment because when people talk about episode one, they talk about it in relation to the original Star Wars. Like, most people saw that film later after living with Star Wars for so long that they only, like, view it in sort of judgmentally
against. What if you strip the baggage out? Right.
Right.
Like, oh, this is the new Star Wars thing and I don't like it because I like the old Star Wars.
Because if it's the first part of a story, right, it should be able to stand on its own. So we thought we might end up liking it more viewing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I think both of us feel like we like the film more in relation to the original films.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes no sense as a movie that is supposed to be the beginning of a story.
Standing on its own. We were like, A, this is the beginning of a story. B, it wasn't successful enough. He never made any sequels. Like, that was the bit.
Yeah.
It was a failed franchise. It was Tom Cruise's The Mummy. It was like, whatever.
That's
hilarious.
Griffin, it's so annoying that we did that for a whole year.
Right.
And people could listen to it. It's out there. You can listen to the first episode.
Episodes of that for a year.
Of just one movie?
We did 10 episodes on The Phantom Menace, and then we discovered Attack of the Clones, and we did 10 more.
It was a big
thing. So we did the whole prequels,
right?
10 episodes each.
Oh my
basically.
God, so you were like, oh my God, there's another one. Like, and then, okay, that's amazing.
That's really
funny. We would end every 10th episode by going to Google to try to pick a new movie to cover on the show, and Google films like The Phantom Menace. And then we would give incredible performances as people who just discovered a film that had apparently come out 16 years earlier.
Did people think you were serious at all, or was everyone in on it? Or were there some people who responded like, what the fuck? Like,
so I think it was disproportionately... No, most people got the bit. And at that point, not enough people were listening. Occasionally, we would get one or two angry messages where they wouldn't know.
Those are good times, Griffin.
It was fun times. But we did, yeah. We essentially spent a year doing Star Wars in these dumb sort of bits. And then at the end of that year, when we wanted to keep the show going, we were like, this kind of became more about George Lucas and trying to figure out what that guy was thinking. Mm-hmm. And then so that became the show was like, we'll pick a director and go through all of their movies and try to figure out sort of their brain or their career arc in some kind
of way. That's great.
Speaking of George Lucas, Griffin, you did the George Lucas talk show May 4th movie marathon live stream.
Yeah.
And you dressed up as Watto for 30 hours.
For 30 hours.
The picture is really concerning.
Thank you.
Wait, who's Watto?
Watto, you've met him.
You've met him.
He
was like a Jewish stereotype in that one.
Oh, he's the one.
He's the one who owns,
Anakin.
Anakin.
Okay.
The slave owner. Yeah. Right. So I always really related to Watto in retrospect because he was the character that was offensive to my people. Yeah. But I think I didn't get that at the time.
I thought you were like, because I own people.
Right. Because I own people. But I a lot of our podcast became about Watto and stemmed out of me tweeting about Watto. And then Distin used to play, Sean Distin, the great Sean Distin, used to play Jar Jar Binks on the George Lucas talk show. Mm-hmm. And then when he moved to L.A., I begged Connor to let me start doing it as Watto. So I've been doing Watto at the live show for like 3 or 4 years, and then I just did it for 30 straight hours, and now we're going to keep doing it every Sunday for the foreseeable future, doing a live stream.
And to be clear, your Watto costume is like a body stocking.
Yeah. Let's describe it just a little bit. You have on a blue, bright blue body stocking.
It's like a morph suit that's supposed to cover your face, and I wear it backwards so that I can unzip it. Just down to my chin.
And you have an elephant nose.
I'm going to link a photo in the episode description so fans can see, because it is a crazy costume.
I have an elephant nose spray painted blue. Mm-hmm. I have child's pixie wings. I have a little vest that I lace up and then a fanny pack, and I wear a yarmulke.
And you seem to have shoved a pillow in there or something.
Yes. I shove a pillow in there, so I have a little gut. But it's a horrible character and a horrible stereotype.
That's
so
funny.
Now exists as sort of like my id.
Wait, so what's the live stream every week going to be? Not 30 hours.
Great question. No, it is going to be 4 to 5 hours every week. Of course, the only way to naturally follow up live streaming every Star Wars movie.
4 to 5 hours? That's a long time.
Just Nicole, just get ready for this bullshit.
I'm already tired. 4 to 5 hours?
And what are you watching?
Every week, we are watching one entire season of Arliss.
Arliss. You're a psycho. I love this.
Yeah. So we're doing all 7 seasons of Arliss 1 week at a time in characters George Lucas and Watto.
I don't even know what Arliss is.
That's that weird show that was on HBO?
HBO.
It was like an early HBO show where people were like, what is this? No one's ever seen this show. But anyone who loved it, loved it.
Nicole, the two S's are dollar signs.
No, for what? This is wild.
Money. It's a comedy about a sports agent.
For what? Money!
It's a post-Jerry Maguire HBO half-hour sitcom starring
Robert
Wool.
What's the name of the guy? Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
Robert Wool.
Oh,
he like
Sandra
has a cigar.
Sandra Oh.
Sandra Oh was on
Amanda
it. Michael
Bynes?
Boatman.
Yeah. Amanda Bynes is
Alan
on it?
Alan Thicke?
The amount of people who are on one episode of Arliss is insane.
Yeah, did Robert Wool, did he just like have blackmail material on
everyone?
I feel like he could just call everyone in for one episode.
Yeah.
We should talk about The Mandalorian.
We should. Okay,
yes.
So The Mandalorian, released in November 2019 on Disney Plus and written by Jon Favreau, which I didn't realize.
Who is a Marvel man.
Yeah.
But Marvel is Disney?
Yes.
But I think of him as a comedian. Like, I think of him as like a comedy guy, kind of, or like actor.
He wrote
like,
Swingers.
Right.
Wrote Swingers. Right. And then his big breakout movie as a director was Elf.
Right.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He wrote Swingers, and then he sort of like later would say like I kind of co-directed Swingers. So then he made Maid, that was him and Vince Vaughn again to sort of try to like recapture the Swingers thing.
And did he? Don't forget Diddy.
And Diddy. Oh, Diddy's in it too.
And did he?
That's what I thought.
And did he?
Wait, who's Diddy? P. Diddy?
No. Yeah. P. Diddy. He's in Made.
He's in the movie Made.
Oh.
Wait, really?
I don't know. He was probably Puff Daddy still at that point. I can't remember the name.
Or maybe
change.
Sean Puffy Combs.
Yeah.
Or Puff. You know.
I remember he when he went from P. Diddy to Diddy because he said the P was getting in between him and his fans. Do you remember that? He actually said that.
What? That's so
That's
stupid.
Very funny. Yep. I wish I was that, like, not self-involved, but, like, cared that much about my name to be like, I'm now N. Diddy or Nasty Nikki. I don't know.
You could be N. Biddy.
This is what I find interesting about Jon Favreau's involvement in Mandalorian. He does the first two Iron Man movies. So he does like the first two Marvel movies out of all of them before Disney even buys Marvel. And he campaigned really hard to direct Avengers and didn't. But he still gets money every time Iron Man's in a movie. So he's just made ungodly amounts of money.
So much money.
That's wild.
Because he made the first one.
Because he created the character? Well,
yeah.
Wait, that's so wild. That what a
he
deal.
He got like a perpetual executive producer credit on any Iron Man thing.
That's a fucking cool ass deal.
Right.
Sure.
The only other Marvel director who I think has that is James Gunn with the Guardian movies. Like if Groot is in a movie, he gets a little more money. I think they both had good agents and both of those movies looked like not very valuable at the time. Like they were lesser characters. So he's just on this insane Marvel drip. And then it didn't get pushed out, but like people didn't like Iron Man 2. He didn't get to direct Avengers, whatever. When Disney bought Star Wars, he was like thirsty on main, constantly posting things on Twitter and Instagram.
Asking Drake to murder her vagina.
He was asking Lucasfilm to murder his pussy. Like he was. He was constantly posting things, just being like, loving all the support from my fans. Hopefully I'll get the Lucasfilm meeting soon. For a guy who directed blockbusters.
You know, and this bums me the fuck out. Because like, when do you have to stop begging for shit?
But this is what's cool.
It's
so
crazy.
This says a lot about his character, okay? They don't hire him to make any of the main films. He goes to Lucasfilm and is like, I would like to help you make a live action TV show. He directs none of the episodes.
He just wrote it.
He wrote almost all of them. And he was like, I just kind of want to be the showrunner. I want to write this. I really just want to do anything within the Star Wars universe.
Because he was, I believe when they were directing it, right, he was busy making The Lion King, right? So he couldn't work on the sets, really. But he wrote it all. He's a big dork who likes Star Wars and wanted to write a show with a Baby Yoda.
Yeah, he was like, I'll do anything I can.
So Baby Yoda is his idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
And he has such a wide range. Like he's done things that are just so different from each other. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in this. I love that he invented Baby Yoda.
Absolutely.
He's a hero.
Okay, so The Mandalorian is set after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order. So it's between Episode 6 of The Return of the Jedi and Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
This is so weird.
I didn't understand that. Let me just... The series depicts a lone bounty hunter in the outer reaches of the galaxy, far from the authority of the New Republic. Okay, I didn't get that.
Me either.
Right. That this is like post-Jedi, Emperor's dead. There's still stormtroopers, but they're kind of just like... You know, they're not official anymore, right? They're kind of, you know, everything's just sort of falling apart.
The reason all the stormtroopers look kind of dirty and busted is because, like, technically the Empire has been canceled. Mm-hmm. So they're all just, like, used stormtrooper armor that they can't wash anymore.
Right. The stormtrooper laundries are closed, I guess.
So this is before Snooki comes.
Exactly.
Okay.
So this is
pre-Snooki.
Right. It's between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens, but it's much closer to Return of the Jedi. Like, this is like a couple years after Return of the Jedi. The Ewoks have won. Mm-hmm. The bad guys are dead, and all their sort of underlings are now just kind of like Nazis hanging out now? In Brazil.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So it's chaotic.
Right. When he meets with Werner Herzog, and everyone's like, how dare you meet with like someone from the Empire? And he's like, the Empire doesn't exist anymore. This is a guy who's just still wearing his old uniform.
But that's when he's supposed to be like the guy who's like, look, the Empire ups and downs, but the trains ran on time. Like he's supposed to be someone who is nostalgic for the Empire, Werner Herzog.
Okay.
He's like Sean Spicer leaving the Trump administration and trying to be like, look, I can like make jokes about it.
I loved how this looked, first of all. I just want to say, when it started,
really
I was like,
great.
I'm in. I even just like how the Star Wars logo looked. They had kind of a rainbow effect to it. I thought it was very cool looking, and I liked how real everything feels. I didn't know that that was going to be what this was like, so that was kind of a nice surprise, especially because I had just accidentally watched the Clone Wars or before this, and so I was like, this was a gift to my eyes. Or what was it? Clone Wars. Yeah, is that what I watched?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Did you like the first episode, Lauren?
Like is such a strange term to use in this podcast because I have a hard time because I think, yes, like ultimately I was kind of like, this is my favorite, but I still was like, I can't pay attention. I don't know who it is. Like, it's really hard for me to focus on this.
Yes, I was like,
the first episode's also slow.
It's too slow. Also, I was like, is he a Boba Fett? Is he a Bobo Jamba? Who's the other Bobo?
Django Fett.
Django Fett, right.
Django.
Yeah.
Is Bobo it a Django Fett?
But, no, because I reviewed this show when it debuted, and I guess they gave us the first episode like that, and that was it. And I watched it, and yeah, you have Baby Yoda right at the end, and you're like, oh, that's intriguing. But everything else, I was like, man, it seems like they're stretching this out to be like TV length, and I don't know, there's not a lot here. Like, it looked really slick, but until Baby Yoda really took hold and like the point of the show became clearer, I was not like convinced it was going to work.
Yes, this was like the A New Hope. A half hour of the gig old man and the little trash can in the desert for a half hour. Why? This was like, okay, so I don't know if this is a Django or a Boba for like 25 minutes, and then we saw Baby Yoda and I screamed and I said, I'm in.
Yeah. Yo, no, they got us at the end. I'm going to read the synopsis of this first episode just so I can understand what I saw. A Mandalorian bounty hunter tracks a target for a well-paying mysterious client. He travels to the desert planet Arvala 7 and meets a native named Kuil who wants to help him so that he can be rid of the criminals and mercenaries who now inhabit the area. The Mandalorian is forced to team up with bounty droid IG-11. They manage to clear the entire facility of guards and discover that the bounty is Baby Yoda, or otherwise known as the Child. IG-11 plans to kill it, but the Mandalorian blasts the droid to protect the baby and his bounty. Oh, I liked that part where that droid came in and he was like about to shoot Yoda. Mm-hmm. And then the guy was like, blow. Yes,
and do you guys know who the voice of IG-11 is?
No.
No.
Taika Waititi. Who we just mentioned.
Okay. Our future employer.
Yes, our future boss. Yes.
And he directs the finale of this season, which is kind of why they hire him to do the next Star Wars movie. I know it's weird to talk about this as if it's like a different time and place, but 8 months ago was very different.
Yeah.
Considering the world we live in.
I was staying inside and I was scared.
But to the point of what David was saying, like they were so underwrapped about this show that no one really knew what it was,
and it was like the show that launched Disney Plus, like,
right, when that first episode went up the night that Disney Plus launched, so people were staying up until like 3 a.m to try to watch this first episode, and no one, like, people didn't know, like, is it an hour long, is it half an hour long?
Right, we knew nothing. We just knew it was about a Mandalorian.
Right, there was like one trailer with almost no dialogue. Baby Yoda was totally secret. And so
We knew there was a twist.
They kept saying there was a twist.
Right.
And David and I are very much on the same page, which is like all the deep lore of Star Wars is window dressing for us. Right. Like that's the sort of stuff that like you can dip into that if you want to. Clone Wars for me, I've always had a hard time getting into because it feels so deep into the lore. And I always like the emotional stories that happen in front of all the sort of like mythic stuff. And when they kept on saying there was a twist, we were like, fuck, is it going to turn out the Mandalorian is like zombie Boba Fett? Is it going to turn out it's like young Rey? Is it going to turn out it's like, you know, any of the things that for us, it's like expanded Star Wars stuff should be new stories and new
not
characters.
Not trying to tie it in to the old. Yeah, exactly.
Because I don't really care about
it. I disagree.
I disagree, too. We like when it connects to the old stuff.
Because it's familiar. And then when you don't understand what's happening, truly, for the first 15 minutes of the back three movies, I kept being like, who's him? Who's her? Who are these people? And then with The Mandalorian, I was like, who's a Mandalorian? What is it? I still
don't
really
know. Who's a Mandalorian?
Who is Amanda?
Yeah, who's Amanda?
Who's a Mandalorian? What's she doing?
To some degree, he is a mystery. And that is a conflict that will run throughout the rest of the season. I will say, I liked this episode a lot more rewatching it now after the whole season has aired. I was similarly kind of confused and underwhelmed by it when it first dropped.
Well, do you feel like it was an oversight that they, like, or just a mistake that they had the Baby Yoda stuff not released until April? Like, we were looking for Baby Yoda merch months ago, and it wasn't coming out until April. And I'm like, that seems crazy. I feel like you could have dropped this before the show, and it would have been a hit.
Yeah. They wanted Baby Yoda to be a surprise within the show, which I think ultimately worked for them because it made the internet explode, because everyone got to feel like they were discovering Baby Yoda.
Okay.
And the problem is, if you make the merchandise in advance, I know too much about merchandise, but if you have the merchandise ready before the show drops,
that shit'll leak.
The internet will always get images of it 6 months in advance. Like, someone takes a photo in the factory in China.
Right.
Before it even gets sent to stores, and then people know the plot.
But I knew about Baby Yoda, so much about Baby Yoda, but I didn't know anything about The Mandalorian, and I still truly screamed really loudly when I saw
was
Baby
truly
Yoda.
Like aghast. I was thrilled. I was like, what? It's so cute. And it's cuter than you even think.
So,
and like,
cute.
But didn't they try to get all the gifts taken off the internet at one point?
They were trying to control
that. Yeah. And then I think they eventually relented on that because obviously, you know,
it only helps,
cute.
I think.
Of course,
it only helps. He became a cultural figure. He's a little puppet of a Yoda.
Right.
Like, and he actually became like a cultural icon of the year.
Well, and I mean, this is one of the things that the big complaints about Quibi is that you can't screenshot and share it online. Yes. So like, being able to share Baby Yoda is half of what made me want to watch this. I wouldn't have cared, you know.
They backed off of it and sort of learned their lesson pretty quickly. But I think there is, it's like this. The Mandalorian, the first episode, is kind of like edging you for as long as possible and sort of like purposefully confusing. I think I liked it more rewatching it now because a lot of the things set up here do come back into play later in like a fun way.
When I was initially watching, I'm like, where is this going? But this is a pretty structured show and everyone you're meeting is going to matter. And it's all going to tie in nicely. Like it's a nicely structured little show.
This is the thing I like the most about Mandalorian without preloading your expectations. But I think you've probably seen this having watched three episodes now. The episodes are kind of standalone. Like the biggest through line is just he won't stop taking care of this kid. You know, which is so sweet.
It's like three men and a baby.
Right.
Like, it's just like, we have this baby. Now we got to figure it out.
It's one mask and a baby. And like every episode, he sort of goes on like a new job, meets some new people, goes to a new planet. And the through line is just his relationship with this kid. And so a lot of the stuff in the first episode, you're like, am I supposed to understand this? Does this matter? Like, am I supposed to be excited by this? And it's not until the final scene where you're like, oh, this is the actual show. This is the only thing I really need to track. But a lot of those characters in the pilot later come back and become characters you care about who are funny.
Yeah. Wait,
I have
Nicole,
a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why doesn't the Mandalorian take off his helmet? Like, does he not shower? Also, the Baby Yoda really reminded me of the baby in Men in Black. Do you know what scene I'm talking about?
The squid baby.
Yes.
Of course.
I've never seen Men in Black.
Lauren, it's a great show. Great show, great movie.
Love Men in Black. Men in Black 2, I don't really count it as part of canon.
No. I'll watch it.
Men in Black 3, I sobbed in the movie theater.
Wow.
Men in Black 3 times Griffin. We have to do Men in Black on our podcast.
I know.
It holds up. It's a great film. Ooh, should have won Oscars.
We've talked about this too often in too many different places, but the moment that really solidified our friendship, David and I, was one night we got drunk and at the bar we were at Men in Black 2 was playing on the TV, and we were talking about how much we still like resent Men in Black 2. Mm-hmm. And we were like, here's the challenge. Before we leave this bar, we need to see if we can fix Men in Black 2.
Right.
We're going to rewrite Men in Black 2.
What that sequel should have been.
Wow.
I think we nailed it. I can't pitch it because Lauren hasn't seen Men in Black 1 yet.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more about The Mandalorian.
Remember in 2018 when border control separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents and deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who still have not been reunified. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm-reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you'd see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and believe that families belong together, join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity to donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer. altrolado.org/volunteer.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. My social battery right now, where would I put it? Ooh, I mean, I'm kind of looking to connect with friends. I'm also looking to retreat a little bit and be by myself. It's hard to know exactly what you need at any given time. And it can be so easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up so much. After the winter, the spring is here. Well, what's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I started therapy when I was about 30, and it was so, so helpful for me for learning about myself, learning about boundaries, learning about my relationships with other people, and how to deal with other people. There's so many things you can benefit from therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. So just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/newcomers today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/newcomers.
Do you want to make your mom smile? Start Mother's Day with flowers or surprise her with gifts from the brand she loves. And guess what? It's delivered with the same day with DoorDash. Get 50% off your next order of up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now on DoorDash. And the promo code is NEWCOMERS. Listen, moms are a gift. I know that best. So give her the best this Mother's Day. Select from hundreds of expertly crafted bouquets to the best of tech to self-care essentials delivered right to the door. Get 50% off your next order up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now with the code NEWCOMERS. That's NEWCOMERS. Order using DoorDash today. Terms apply. Get a Mother's Day gift as unique as she is with DoorDash.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there, and you know what? You can update it with an app, so every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Hey, we're back. And we should talk about chapter two, The Child.
Okay.
Do you want to read this?
Sure. Upon returning to his ship, the Mandalorian finds a team of Jawas scavenging for parts. With the assistance of Kuwali, he bargains with the Jawas to return the ship's part in return for retrieving the egg. After fighting with a mudhorn to collect its egg, Mandalorian and Kuwal, I don't say that right, repair the ship, allowing him to leave.
How is it? Quill? How do you say it?
I made it up. I have no idea.
Kuwali?
Kuwil? Kuwil?
It's K-U-I-I-L. Which cool. is not how you spell things.
Cool.
I thought the cool. egg was going to be Baby Yoda because he was kind of in an egg. Was that what I was supposed to think?
Maybe. This is one of those shows where like sometimes they're really playing off of giving you false expectations.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you're just, of course, reading into everything too much because it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you're trying to figure out if something is important or not.
Yeah.
Well, I spent a lot of the episode arguing with my roommate, John Milheiser. John Milheiser, my roommate, saying that aren't these the sand people that Anakin killed? And he was like, no, Jawas are different than sand people. Yeah. And then I was like, but I don't think they are.
Wait,
no, he was like,
Jawas? We know Jawas.
Jawas sold C-3PO and R2-D2 to Luke Skywalker.
That's
Jawas
what are John in said, and I said,
Tatooine.
What?
Yeah. Right, the Jawas, they're about 3 feet high. They're like a few apples high, and they're little
like
merchant-y people, and they like to trade. And then sand people, they're like 7 feet tall. And
but
they're
still hooded and dark, right?
They are
they
also hooded
eyes?
And dark. They do not have red eyes.
They have robot eyes, but they have like mummy bandages.
Oh. And they go like, and they hit you with a stick.
We saw
I was
Jawas,
really confused.
And we were familiar with them. So we know what those are.
I was confused.
They're both in A New Hope.
Okay.
But these Jawas have, I feel like the Jawas in Mandalorian, their robes are black. Like they look a little different.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we were scared of Jawas. They were in A New Hope, weren't they? They were creepy.
Yes.
Yes.
And they're the ones
creepy.
That Anakin kills when he kills the women and the children and has his breakdown.
I killed them all. The women, the children.
He didn't care at all.
Jawas they're like the used car salesman species.
Right. They were so creepy in this, and I liked how all of the special effects in this are amazing. Like the costumes, Jawas are amazing. Their eyes are so creepy, and they're just scary. And then when they got the egg, I was really happy that it was just a big gooey yolk. I thought that was fun.
I was so angry. I was like, this Mandalorian risked his life for these guys
trashed.
To have a snack. To have a goop snack, to have like a go-gurt in an egg.
That to me felt like very like Ewok throwback-y kind of like, what do they want? Like it was just weird.
Yeah.
Like that they wanted to eat the egg. I was like, that's fun.
I feel like Star Wars lives and dies based on how much mystery there is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like not the show being a mystery, but the amount of things that go kind of unexplained. Like, that's when Star Wars is working, where you're like, weird, what's in that egg? And they don't take that much time explaining it. All you need to know is, like, the egg is the thing they're trying to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When Star Wars is bad, it's monologues of people explaining everything.
Sure, right. Yeah, the egg
that's
is part
true.
Of the sacred, you know, collection of orbs that's gonna, the man, you know, you're right. And instead, it's just like, look, they're hungry, the egg is tasty, get them an egg, they'll get you your thing.
So I like that, like, the first episode of Mandalorian has a little too much explaining because it's all the, like, what's the new mission? What's the puck? Who's the suspect?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that sort of stuff. From here on out, like, I feel like the second episode is them trying to show you how much that's not going to be the formula. Because here's an episode with, like, very little dialogue and no human faces in it. It's like Jawas.
Oh, yeah.
Animatronic Nick Nolte. Mm-hmm. Mandalorian wearing a helmet and Baby Yoda.
Yep.
I liked that there was no talking. I was like,
I love it.
Yeah, me too.
My favorite part is when Baby Yoda was using the Force to like save him from the big thing.
That was so cute.
And then it was so cute. And then he got so tuckered out, he fell right asleep.
He gets real tuckered out.
I screamed.
That was really cute.
But that's also such a good moment of just like, he's a guy who's trying his hardest not to fall for Baby Yoda, mm-hmm. which is tough.
Right.
How do you turn right. down that punim, right?
Yeah.
Right. But Baby Yoda, to him, it's like an item he's retrieved. He needs to think of
hunter.
It. Yes, mm-hmm. in a mercenary way.
I was trained to just get the mission done. But once Baby Yoda saves his life, it's going to be a little hard.
Is there a movie that's, because this is like feeling like a very similar, like just story concept to me, like that of like you have this tough guy and this cute thing and he has to protect it.
I mean, I think that Favreau has been upfront that he was inspired
Lone
by
Wolf and Cub.
Lone Wolf and Cub, which is like a classic Japanese manga.
Can we dork out
movies,
on you for like a minute here?
Yeah.
Which is like an old, you know, a samurai who's like, you know, tough and scary and a little baby that he walks around with in a little baby carriage.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like one of the great like kind of mythic stories in Japanese culture that's been like a long running comic book series and they've made like 30 movies about. It's been adapted a bunch of times.
I feel like, you know, you have like The Road, like remember that? You know, like there's a lot of sort of like, you know, father and son.
Dick Tracy, the professional.
Right? Yeah. I just watched it.
Oh. Right.
Nicole, how good is Dick Tracy? What a wild movie.
Oh, it's a lot of primary colors.
Yeah. It sure is.
I saw it in theaters when I was a kid. And I don't remember anything except for just like a flash of Dick Tracy. But I don't think I understood what was going on at all in that movie.
That is another movie you need to rewatch, Lauren.
Okay. I'm putting the list is getting long.
Fucking wild. Dick Tracy, the movie, feels like a 3 a.m. DCM bitch show.
It sure does.
Where everyone is trying to one-up the person who came out on stage before them.
My thing is, my head is the size of a wall.
Right.
And then Dustin Hoffman, an award-winning actor, plays a man who mumbles.
Yes.
Named Mumbles.
I believe he shot that scene the morning after he won his Oscar.
That's hilarious. Oh my
like that's
God.
What's wild. It's just Warren Beatty calling in all his favors and all these super respected actors are putting on dumb makeup and being like, well, I can't let Al Pacino outstage me. So they're coming out and being like, humana.
Okay, I'm watching
that. Yeah, that's the whole movie. Good. It's so wild.
That's hilarious.
And then Madonna slithers around.
I know. Singing Stephen Sondheim songs. That movie's
wild.
Fucking wild. Also, that movie is made while Warren Beatty and Madonna are fucking.
Hmm. What?
Whoa.
I didn't know they was fucking.
They were fucking hard. This is why
I know if it was hard, Griffin.
No,
I know it was hard.
Yeah,
we know it was hard. Thank you, Nicole.
But if that Dick Tracy is like everything, we're gonna throw everything at you. Where the Mandalorian's the opposite. Mm-hmm. He's like, let's strip as much away as we can, make it really simple. Like little dialogue, very little plot, right? Like let's just try and have it be very primary.
Well, and this is my heady nerd corner I'd like to do for like 20 seconds.
Boy.
The thing I like about this being so inspired by Lone Wolf and Cub is Star Wars is so much George Lucas taking like, let me look at like
Kurosawa
King Arthur, you know, like medieval sort of like myths. And let me look at samurai stories and let me look at Westerns. And he's sort of combining like cowboys and samurais and knights into one stew. And I feel like Mandalorian is getting back to that. Like so much of the later Star Wars stuff is about Star Wars, you know? Like the later films are people trying to make things about what Star Wars used to be.
Yeah.
And the prequels are George Lucas trying to explain Star Wars too much. And this is like going back to the formula of like the Mandalorian's essentially a cowboy. You know, the premise of the show is essentially the samurai story of having to take care of a baby.
I like that.
I like that it gets down to the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Okay. Chapter 3, The Sin. The Mandalorian accepts a new job from Greef Karga. Feeling guilty for abandoning Baby Yoda to the Empire, he turns back to attack the client's base and rescue the baby.
This one was pretty intense.
Yeah.
Him admitting like, look, I can't get over Baby Yoda. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is his save the cat moment. This is his.
Right.
Right. I've broken my own code, my personal code and the code of my clan, because love conquers all at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Okay, but I have questions. So wait, why do the Mandalorians, why are they a secret underground society? Why are they always searching for metal, for more armor? How are they eating? Who is the girl? Who's this woman? Just melting down metals? Who is she?
Some of this is explained. I can give you really basic speed round answers.
Okay.
Are we going to watch more or no?
Yeah, Mars, are we going to watch more?
No plans to.
Okay.
It's not expected.
So then I'll give you these answers in the hopes that maybe encourages you to keep on watching, because I think this series is good.
Okay.
These aren't spoilers. I'm giving you like the most basic world building.
What is it?
Stuff.
8 episodes total, Griffin?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty short.
I might finish it, which is shocking.
Yeah. If we finish it, we better talk about it.
That's true.
So the idea is that they're not like a species. They're like a clan. They're like a creed. They're all sort of bonded in the same sort of principles and kind of like warrior's code.
Right. And their big thing is wearing helmets and not taking them off. That's like the number one rule of Fight Club for them.
It's almost like a monastery. They're like warrior monks. And rather than taking a vow of silence, it's like you can never show your face to anybody.
And like, as the show goes on, there's more people who are like, come on, take off the helmet. And he's
Please, come on, dude.
Not going to do it.
Show me your fucking face. But the idea is that the Empire, while they were still strong, led like a slaughter of the Mandalorians. So now they're all living underground and only one of them will go up at a time.
Oh.
You're seeing what little remains of their previous like strong clan. Only one of them will go up at a time and they're mostly like hiding in the shadows like Mando, sort of like on the run. Mm-hmm. So like Mando might go out, go grocery shopping. It's a little like being in quarantine and then come back down,
Relatable.
Feed everyone else.
Oh, yeah, they're quite socially distanced, I suppose. Yes. I never thought about that.
And so they all still have their basic roles in their sort of their vestiges of their society. So the lady is the one who makes the armor, and the armor is sort of their like Scientology rising up the ranks, going clear. The more armor you have, the better armor it gets. It's a signifier of what you've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And that metal he gets paid in is so valuable to them because it's essentially like Nazi gold. Like they stole the metal that was their natural resource and then stamped it with their symbol. They're swastikas.
Oh.
So they're like, how dare you work for these people? And he was like, I felt like I had to get our stuff back. We're already barely making it.
Okay. I truly did not understand that fight. I was like, well, he seems real mad.
It's a little dense.
It's a little dense, and I honestly didn't really get it. And
I did not get it until rewatching.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, okay. I think the first time you're watching too, it's such a slick show. It looks so fancy. That you're just really drawn in by how it looks. Like the first time you're watching, you're like, wow, this is really expensive. And anytime Baby Yoda, you're also just sort of like, whenever he's not on screen, you're like, where is Baby Yoda right now?
Mm-hmm.
What's he thinking about? I wanna check in with him. Like, you know, he's the guy.
Yeah.
And I feel like episode 3 is the breaking point in that way, because even though it's the episode that he's in the least, it's the episode that most solidifies, like, this show is going to be about Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Like, everything changes at this point. He's going to save him. Like, the die is cast. Every episode is just, they are an unbreakable unit. And his priority in life is keeping Baby Yoda safe.
Another question. How did the other Mandalorians know that this Mandalorian was in trouble to come fly in with jetpacks like the Rocketeer to save him?
Okay, fair question. great thing to throw out. Don't really know, right, Griffin? Oh. I don't think there's like.
Yeah,
I
think it's, I don't
know, maybe
like,
they have like.
He hasn't
radar.
Come home. He's not texting back.
Yeah, right.
And they also know that this Mandalorian is kind of like he's a little bit of a cowboy. He like runs off his own spirit. He makes risky decisions. So I think they're just a little concerned. They sense that like sort of edge in him, and the fact that he's already showing a little too much affection for Baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already letting Baby Yoda get to him a little bit.
That's sweet.
What did you guys think of Werner Herzog? Remember that?
That was fun. That was a fun cameo.
And he keeps coming back.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh.
We're going to tell you guys a little trivia you probably already know, but for the listener at home. Okay, so we kind of said the show is set 5 to 7 years after the events of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, in season one, episode two, when the Jawa drops the item on Mando's... Wait, his name is Mando? Did I not catch that?
That's his nickname.
That's his nickname. He's a Mandalorian named Mando?
That was the first draft.
It's like when people call me Whitey.
A distinctive bell clanging sound is heard. This is a straight lift from the classic Looney Tunes style of comedy when a dropped anvil hits someone's head. That's pretty funny.
That's silly. During the first episode, when the bounty is looking through the carbonite bounties, one of them is Star Wars creator George Lucas.
Oh.
I did not clock that. That's funny.
I didn't clock that guy, at all.
I didn't either.
According to Dave Filoni, there was one scene that required a large number of stormtroopers, but they didn't have enough costumes. He ended up drafting members of the 501st. 501st. I was like, I've never seen it written like that.
Well, me neither.
501st.
Common to be the 501st something.
This is the podcast where people are like, Nicole Byer can't read.
The words you have to read are not real. Let's be very clear.
It's so hard. Oh my God. So essentially, they didn't have enough stormtrooper costumes. So there's a whole fan club who specialize in making own storm/clone trooper cosplay costumes.
Wow.
I wonder if those people got a rental fee. Probably not.
I hope so. They should have. I'll say this too. The thing that's cool about those people, the 501, is they do it.
About them?
They do it for charity.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
All right, because I was also skeptical.
That is a surprising turn.
They have different like clubs in different cities and states and whatever, but they'll go to conventions and they all have their like really detailed homemade suits.
But why is it called 501st? That's really fucked up
why
for
it's
people
501.
To read.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the idea is they're riffing on like Civil War reenactors.
Oh,
they're like the Star Wars version of Civil War reenactors. So they're trying to make it sound like it's a militia.
Honestly, of all the wars, I wouldn't do Civil War.
No.
Anywho,
it's a little fraught that one.
Okay, Bryce Dallas Howard directed the episode Chapter 4, Sanctuary, and her dad, Ron Howard, directed Solo, A Star Wars Story in 2018.
Keeping it in the family.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That one's maybe my favorite episode.
Your favorite, Griff?
I think that one and the finale are the two best ones.
Yeah, the finale is probably the best episode, but that one is fun. That one is... Yeah, you guys, if you stick with it, there's some guests that drop in, some fun guests.
We might.
Because now the format of the show is Mando takes a job and brings his kid to work with him.
Right.
Oh, boy.
And the kid's going to get in some hijinks and maybe Amy Sedaris is in an episode. You don't know.
Really?
Oh. Eugene Cordero is in the Bryce Dallas Howard episode.
Okay, you've piqued my
interest. Adam Pally's in an episode. Bill Burr. A lot of comedy people.
I forgot to mention, I loved that at the beginning of episode one of this series when Horatio Sands and Brian Posehn were in there. I was like, this is like fun.
There's a
Horatio
lot of comedy
that
people
blue fish gill
no,
head
he
guy.
Wasn't.
Yes,
that's
he
when
was.
I knew his voice.
And Brian was in the like speedy car thing they were
God.
In to get away
I didn't
from.
Realize.
Yeah.
But this is the other thing I like about Mandalorian is I think by the nature of it being a TV show and not a movie and how much like pressure they were putting on the movies.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like Star Wars like loosening its tie a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes.
And not
we can have a little fun here.
Not having everything
so seriously.
Like, be like have to feed into the whole Skywalker myth or whatever. Like,
right.
You can just
I appreciated. I felt like that was like John Favreau's like taste coming through with the like funny, cool people and all that stuff. It was cool.
Also, every time Baby Yoda got out of his little bassinet.
I would
just grab my face and be like, oh no, he shall kill you, go for that. I love him so much.
Nicole, at a certain point in the show, he gets a little ball that he plays with. I mean,
right? We've gotten that, the ball
is that,
from
that,
the...
That, right. Yeah. That gets introduced. There's more ball stuff.
Oh, I love
he gets
balls.
a little soup bowl.
He gets a soup bowl?
He drinks a little sort of...
I've seen that meme where it's like the tea kind
it
of...
It looks like a teacup, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's really cute.
Can I tell you folks a really sweet story?
Yeah.
So they did it all like practically with a puppet, save for the stuff where he has to move like more and, you know, digitally removing the puppeteer and stuff like that. But their thought was, oh, the puppet is just so the actors have something to work with, and then we'll replace it with CGI. They weren't planning on keeping the puppet on camera. And Werner Herzog did a scene with the puppet, and he went to Jon Favreau, and he was like, you must keep this puppet. It would be a crime against humanity.
You are cowards if you do this. You must have the puppet. I think he called them cowards.
Yes. Oh my God. He's amazing.
He was like, this puppet is heartbreaking. It has a tragic humanity to it.
Yes.
You dare not erase it.
It's very accurate.
Yeah, he nailed it.
Well, The Mandalorian currently holds a 93% critic and audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, being praised for its action scenes, production value, and world building. Nicole, what's your score? What do you give it?
I really hated the first episode, except for the last 2 minutes of it. But I'm going to give it, like, in the Star Wars universe, an 8.
That's good. 8 out of 10.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. How about you guys? I mean, how do you rate it compared to your other stuff that you've seen?
8 is right where I'm at, I would say. Mm-hmm. Right? Would you? Yeah. Are you there, Griffin? Yeah.
I'm at an 8, bordering on an 8.5.
8.5.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Sure, sure. I feel like
as someone who likes most of Star Wars, like, I even still think this is higher tier Star Wars.
I agree.
Yeah. Like, I feel like whether I care or not about it, I give it an A. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, this is as well done as it gets. Like, this is cool and looks great. And
also, just on principle, I'm like, this is what I want to see people doing with Star Wars. I want them to be telling little character stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to just have that sort of sense of mystery and travel and all that sort of stuff. I also just kind of like, it's kind of what I want out of TV shows in general. Like, I like that the episodes are a little bit self-contained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that each episode is kind of its own movie.
Yeah.
And like, by nature of that, the first episode's kind of a bummer because it has to do all the table setting. But after that, each episode sort of becomes a little self-contained, and it's just like, here's another trip.
Yeah.
Here's another weekend for old Mando and his baby.
And here's another fun person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we're coming to the end of our show.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so much. Well, is there anything you would like to plug besides obviously your podcast Blank Check, which is hilarious and great and very popular?
We try.
Thank you.
So I feel like people know, but is there anything else you would like to plug at this time?
Griffin, you're doing a million things. I mean, you can read my writing on The Atlantic always.
I'm doing too much stuff online because I live alone and I'm going crazy.
That's good.
So you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Griff Lightning on both, and I'll post about all the stuff I'm doing, but I'm doing a lot of live streams and stuff.
The Arliss live stream
every Sunday. The Tick is very canceled, but I still plug it because I'm very proud of it.
It's good.
Yeah.
And it's right there for you to watch.
Yeah.
And I'll say, Nicole's going to be on Blank Check pretty soon. We have an episode on the books.
Oh, good.
And Lauren, I will be pestering you about coming on the show as well.
I'm chilling in my house, so let's do it. Nicole, anything you want to plug?
Yes, I have a book coming out June 2nd. The link's in my bio on Twitter and Instagram at Nicole Byer. You can pre-order it. Please use indie bookstore links because that helps me more than like another big company that you could get something from. I won't say which one. You can guess. But it's called #VeryFat, #VeryBrave. The Fat Girl's Guide to Being Brave and Not a Melancholy Down in a Dumb Sweeping Fat Girl in a Bikini. And it's a coffee table self-help book.
I was just seeing something online about ordering books online and how during this time, especially, people should order from a specific bookstore that you know in your, it's not like a big chain, like a local indie bookstore is the best place, especially directly from them, and not a website that gets books from indie bookstores, because then they get a cut. If you go directly to the store, they get all the money and
I
then
think
you benefit as well.
BookPal, I believe, is a website. Hold on, let me look it up. BookPal, I think, is where you tell it where you are and it like sources around and then tells you a local bookstore that's near you to order from. I believe that's what it's called. I'm sure if I'm wrong, some nice aggressive person on Twitter will let me know.
Yes, there's so look for that. And I would like to plug my movie The Wrong Missy on Netflix. I would like to sort of brag a little bit that it's the number one movie on Netflix right now in most countries, and it's really exciting. So I didn't expect for that many people to watch it. So I'm very excited for everyone to watch it, and I hope you enjoy it. I hope it makes you laugh. And yeah, so that's all I want to plug right now. And let's move into our five Star Wars segment.
Yes.
Here we have a nice review from ChrisBT74. It's called Killing Time. Space is vast and cold. Wow, this is going to be really deep. On a long trip to the Outer Rim, Poe and Finn kicked back in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon with not much to do. "I'm bored," Finn proclaimed. We did ask for fan fiction. Mm-hmm. Pulling out his iPhone, Poe said, "Me too, bud. Let's try a podcast." He scrolled through and came across one called Newcomers. "Hey, this one is about Star Wars. A fan fiction episode sounds cool, right?" Finn said, all right, okay, let's check it out. They both loved it, laughing, and Poe said, "This is making me horny." "Oh yeah," Finn agreed. "Wow, where did your pants go, dude?" "What can I say?" Poe shrugged. Are you going to take control of his joystick or what?" Oh yes, Finn took it on. Poe leaned back, relaxing. "Not a bad way to kill some time," he said, smiling. 5 stars.
I liked that
one. Wow, I loved that review.
It was like filthy, but like class filth.
Can I say?
That was really
It was sweetly filthy, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know?
If anything threatened to kill blank check at any stage, it was, I think, our 7th episode ever when we were still doing Phantom Menace.
We were out of ideas.
We had run out of things to talk about. And by the way, our original pitch was, we will only talk about Phantom Menace indefinitely. We'll do it. We could go on for years. And our producer was like, 10 episodes. And by episode 7, I was already like, it's the fan fiction episode. And I made David listen to the dirtiest fan fiction I could find. Yeah. And I found a story about Obi-Wan sucking off Qui-Gon Jinn at a galactic glory hole.
Oh no.
That sounds good.
I like it.
It's good. It's very convoluted. It's kind of like a high society thing. Like they have to do the glory hole because like that's the procedure on that.
It's the customs of the people.
right.
They don't want to be disrespectful.
So they just kind of like, oh no, I guess we're gonna have to do this. Like it's
hilarious. But, yeah.
And neither one knows the other one is participating on the other side of the wall.
Then they start figuring it out, Griffin.
But the beauty is, because a lot of fan fiction like that, you know, it slides you in very like subtly and carefully. It starts out kind of banal before things start to steam up. The opening line of this story was, Qui-Gon Jinn stuck his penis through the hole.
That sounds like something we would write, yep. Honestly. Ours are very bold and disgusting and disturbing, and it was very fun. And also way too easy for both of us, I think, to write fan fiction.
Absolutely. It was a joy.
Out. Have you guys ever tried?
I have not.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I think you'd be really good at it.
Yeah.
You should do fan fiction for whatever thing you're talking about. It'd be a fun little
every episode.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, like to do like if you did Nora Ephron and then do a Nora Ephron fan fiction of Tom Hanks and
that would be perfect.
Right. Yeah, what if Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan ended up together? We can write that speculative fan fiction. A scenario that has never played out.
Oh my God. Well, thanks so much, you guys. That was so fun.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for doing it.
Oh, the treat was ours.
It was so great to be here. It was a delight to be invited on. It was great.
And I will say, a joy to rewatch these episodes. If that's any encouragement for the two of you to finish, because I remember struggling through the first couple a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a surprise.
I think we might keep going. We'll see.
Yeah.
In my mind, I was like, I love this whole series because it ends so goddamn strong.
The ending is pretty great.
We both live with people who might be more inclined to want to keep watching. Yes. So I feel like that's part of it. So maybe we will.
Yes.
We have plans for the next season. It won't be Star Wars.
No.
We're in talks about what it might be.
Going to be another insufferable franchise.
So we're looking forward to the future, of course. And we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye. Do you guys follow Amanda Bynes on Instagram? It's an interesting time.
It makes me sad. She's now pregnant and has a face tattoo, and her boyfriend seems a little shady.
I think I brought it up
before. She has a face tattoo? Oh my God.
She has a face tattoo.
Yeah, she got a heart tattoo here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think I have brought her up before. I'm sorry.
I don't know if you have. But like she keeps trying to be like, I'm okay and I'm gonna come back. And then she's like, now I'm pregnant and I have face tattoos.
I know.
Wasn't she like thirsting after some celebrity on Maine and then in the middle of the thirst mentioned that she was pregnant?
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't
see that. She used to tweet about Obama thirstily all the time. I'm not making that up.
And she was always trying to get some on Maine.
Yes. She told Drake, I know, that Drake could murder her pussy. And then she did an interview where the interviewer said, what did you mean by that? And she was like, oh, that he could murder my pussy. It was, she, it
was That's how to find the words.
Her commitment to the bit is really impressive.
This is unrelated to anything, but how do you feel about Drake having purses for his future wife? I think that's so weird.
Don't like that. Don't like
I
it.
Would be so upset if I was fine. I was like, oh my God, Drake loves me. We like wooed each other. Oh my God, what's in this big ass closet? 1,000 purses? Ew.
Yeah. And you don't get to pick any of them
hidden?
Out.
So do you think maybe they're not for his future wife and Drake just likes to prance around with purses at night? And wait, I'm not saying that's true. Bad. I love that.
No, that would actually be way more interesting, I think. But
if he was just like, I wish men had nice purses.
It would make sense. It feels like, because I thought that collection looked like an investment, like buying these like expensive bags. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone was like, these always sell for like thousands more in the future and whatever.
Because
it makes sense.
Most of them are Hermes bags. And yeah, they're Hermes really expensive. Bags and Chanel bags are the only purses that increase in value.
Oh,
yes.
That's a good tip.
Yeah.
The only thing I know is that he has a duplex closet, right? Like his closet has stairs. Jeez, it's like a two floor closet.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck?
I
don't have enough clothes.
So upset. Oh, I do. But like, I wouldn't want to be like, where's this sequined ugly thing I bought? Ugh, upstairs.
Yeah. Too much work.
Can I throw out my theory?
Yeah.
Please.
I think he respects the artistry of purses. Like he's a fashion guy. You know,
that's a
and
lot
I think
of purses.
As a guy who understands style and, you know, collects sneakers and different clothing items is like, man, purses, I'm recognizing like the quality here. I want to buy them.
Or,
I can't justify to the public why I own this many purses. I have to say they're for my future wife.
Or he wants to dress up his future wife and control the way she looks.
That's what I'm afraid of.
The patriarchy. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm afraid of. Unromantic about it. If I started dating someone and then they were like, hey, here's my closet of t-shirts I bought for my future husband. I'd be like, you're not waiting to meet your future husband and find out what they like?
Yeah, it's super weird.
Mm-hmm.
But a woman would never do that because the patriarchy.
Although if someone had a closet full of t-shirts they wanted to give me, I'd be happy. That would be a great one. I think I'd be more excited about that than purses.
Yes.
I think I would take shoes. I love shoes.
But what if they had like all the wrong size? I don't know. It seems so complicated.
Yeah. Well, I wear an 11. I got big old dogs.
I wear a 10. We're right there.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah. How often do you get propositioned for feet pics? It happens a lot to me.
Not often enough. One time in my like Instagram comments, it was like on a pole dancing video or something, and some man was like, how about you do one of just them toes? And I was so excited.
Well, here's my question about it. And I wonder what you guys think about foot fetishes, but it's uncomfortable to have someone just ask to see your feet, but at the same time, I don't see feet as sexual, so I sort of want to give into it and just go, sure.
Because it's like, it's no skin off my nose, fine, here they are.
I can get a lot of money that way.
I found out recently in my weekly self-Googling that I am on WikiFeet Men.
You are.
Oh, good.
You are on WikiFeet.
Not from any of my work, because I was like, I don't think I've ever taken my shoes off on camera. It is, in fact, a tweet I posted like 8 years ago.
They will find anything. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, Lauren, are you on WikiFeet?
Mm-hmm. I have a 5-star rating.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Wow.
When I finally found out I was on WikiFeet, my rating was bad feet. So
no way.
So what's your rating?
Well, now I don't know, but I tweeted. I was like, I have bad feet. Can people upvote my feet?
They need to.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to go give us 5 stars on our feet. Don't worry about reviewing the podcast.
It is one of those things, too, where it's like, I agree with you, where I'm like, take as many pictures of my feet as you want. Do whatever you want with them. I don't care. It doesn't feel like personal or, you know, vulnerable to me. But also, I just can't. Like, with no judgment,
you can't
there are
get there.
Few parts of a human body I find less erotic than the foot.
I agree.
Same. It seems like if you're going to have a very, very specific thing that you need to deal with, I guess there are, it's an easier, like, feet, yeah. It's okay. You can get pictures of feet, I guess. It just doesn't strike me as, I don't know. It's weird how it becomes such an outsized thing for feet people.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Without judgment. It's just...
No. I have a friend who sent some used Keds to a guy for a few hundred bucks. Those shoes only cost like $20. So it was like,
yeah, wow.
Oh, great.
I often think about doing things like that because now I have a ton of time.
Me too.
So I'm like, I mean, if you like brown feet that aren't that cute, I'll send you pictures of my feet. I'll send you my nasty shoes.
I think there's a market for your exact feet. I think a lot of people think they're very attractive. I'm sure of it.
Thank you. 4 stars on WikiFeet. Just looked it up.
4 stars is great.
Wow.
That's a great rating.
It's better than Griffin Newman. No offense.
I'm 3.5. I'm not ranking pretty well. I got to try to bump it up. I need to maybe
post some more.
I need to submit photos directly to them.
Well, this is the thing. I've done it as a test a couple times. If you post a picture of your feet in your Instagram story, they'll be up there really soon. Anybody. I believe this. They will get up there. Someone will put them up. Wow. Yeah.
If you post a picture of your feet in your stories, they'll be up there. That's really funny. I love it. I love that you've done that.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.